A wonderful good morning. You are listening to Insert Moin. My name is Michael, and this time this episode will be in English because it's an English interview, and I got a special guest today. This is Douglas from Limited Run. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Douglas, you are right now in America, and we got a weird time shift of, I think, 12 hours or so.
yeah, that's the morning here.
It's right in the morning. It's in the afternoon here. It's 16 Uhr here in Germany. So I'm glad that we could arrange this somehow of the time shift. So please tell me a bit about yourself. Your Douglas Limited Run, what is it all about, Limited Run?
My name is Douglas. I'm one of the co-founders of Limited Run. Mm-hmm. Basically, what we do is we take previously digital-only games and make them physical. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to preserve video game history and kind of fight the digital age. Yeah. So we work with developers that may not have the financial means to create a physical copy for them. Mm-hmm. So, and then we take care of that for them and basically help them release that. So we started as do you want the whole backstory?
yeah, sure. Okay, we got plenty of time.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, we started off as Mighty Rabbit Studios, and we were kind of going through a period of uncertainty when it came down to like what we were going to do next. Mm-hmm. So Josh decided to start Limited Run Games and asked me to help him, and he took a gamble on a game we already had called Breach and Clear that had came out on Vita on mm-hmm. PSN. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I went with that first is just because that was the first game we had ready for a Sony platform. It hadn't done that well digitally in the 6 months it had been out, mm-hmm. but we decided to take a shot and release it as a physical for Vita. So we did 1,500 copies using the money that we had, mm-hmm. and then it sold out in 108 minutes, which was pretty ridiculous.
this is basically... After that,
our next goal was to get Saturday Morning RPG out, which was another title we made. But after we saw how well Breach and Clear did, we decided to start reaching out to other developers and being like, hey, we've researched how to do this and we understand like what all the roadblocks are and we'd like to help other developers out. So in between us doing Breach and Clear and Saturday Morning RPG, we already had started reaching out to other people. Mm-hmm. Or in fact, they had started reaching out to us. And here we are today.
This is really cool because I think you got a bunch of limited run versions out already. I think about 10 games or so.
It's like 23 individual releases. Like game wise, I'm trying to think.
It's in the morning.
Yeah, it's like we're about to have our 16th individual game out. Mm-hmm. So yeah. 15th and 16th will be Shantae.
Ah, we're really cool. We're big fans of Shantae.
Shantae's awesome. We're super excited to be working with WayForward.
This is really cool because that's very interesting. You said it already. When you release a new game, you already have a date set and you announce this on Twitter and on social media. It's basically like these games are sought out within minutes. I think the biggest record was about 2 minutes for Apes Odyssey or so.
New and Tasty was actually in stock for about 2 days. Soldner. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And Vita though, it did sell out very, very quickly. I'd probably say our fastest, I feel like, was Soldner, though.
Ah, okay, I see. That's really cool. But this speaks for the high demand of games that are released on retail. But why do you think that is? Why do you think people still want retail games instead of all the digital stuff?
I think the market's changed. There's a lot of, because of the internet and just there's so many like classic systems out there now, people are getting into collecting. Mm-hmm. It's definitely like expanded now. Like there's more kids into it now. A lot of adults are going back and collecting games that they played as a kid. Mm-hmm. And it's become more of a mentality of like owning something that's gonna like last through time. And a lot of people are seeing what's happening with the digital stuff. like delisting or the fact that they don't actually own it. And a lot of people are just, they really like to have games displayed on their shelf. And because our games are limited, it kind of creates a demand. And that's another reason why people rush for it, because they want to be able to own these games and be able to play them like years down the line.
Yeah, let's talk about this, what you mentioned with the listing. That's something that happened in the past years, for example, with some Sega games, for example. I think Afterburner or other titles where the license deal just finished because of the music or something and so on. And they have no other choice than to delist all those games. So basically, if you're interested in playing those games, you can't anymore. They are not available anymore.
Yeah, unless you had previously downloaded and don't delete it. Mm-hmm. But like, if your hard drive dies, you're basically out of luck. Like, I'm one of the ones that really hurt me was the fact that Scott Pilgrim got delisted.
Oh no!
But, thankfully, I still had that on my Xbox, and I even have all the DLC for it. But like, I'm terrified one day my Xbox is just going to die, and then I'll lose that game forever.
Yeah, but that's that happened recently with PT, the playable teaser from Silent Hill, where Konami said, "Nope, we pulled that from the stores. We pulled it from everywhere. We won't renew the license for the game, so it basically you can't play it anymore." And that can't happen to any retail release, I think. Hopefully.
Yeah, that's the scary part. PT was definitely the most like random one that kind of came out of nowhere, and that's another reason why, like, I haven't upgraded my hard drive on my PS4 is I'm just terrified of, like, if it doesn't transfer properly or if something goes wrong.
Yeah, right. So that's pretty cool. So how is it, is the communication between you and the publisher? I'm sorry, the developer. So I heard from you, from Limited Run, from all of this, the first time when my friends at Sacred Studios, I worked with them on their game Realm of Skies as an author, and you published their game, the prequel to this, Realm of Moon, as a PS4 and a Vita version. And can you give me an example how this works? So someone is interested in releasing a game over Limited Run. What do developers have to do?
Okay. Yeah, that's easy. We have basically our whole business, like our business model is actually on our website. So what we do with developers, if they contact us, is we let them know that we'll handle the cost of goods for them. So that's one of the biggest burdens developers face, trying to get digital physical copies made. So we'll handle the entire cost of goods. And then once we make back the cost of goods and sales, we do a 70-30 split in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about what they'll get in a digital capacity, if not better sometimes. So we actually help the developers make a lot of money, and they don't have any financial risks. Like, the most work they have to do is it equates to about a couple of hours. So it also depends on how involved they want to be. But we try to make it as easy as possible for everyone. Which is the reason why we're probably so successful right now. So that's about it in a nutshell. We like,
to
make it easy.
So the communication with all the stuff like covers and inlays and so on, this is all you talk to them with the developers, so they got full control over this.
Oh yeah. So basically we have templates for a lot of stuff. So we'll let the developers know, like, hey, here's a template if you want to, like, create the mock-up for the case yourself. Or sometimes they'll provide us with art assets, and we'll kind of, like, give them an example of what we're thinking, and then we'll discuss back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also, like, with SideQuest Studios and East Asia Soft, we did manuals for a lot of the games, all of them, actually.
Yeah.
So that's another option they have, which I really enjoyed having manuals in the games, especially the Vita games, since that's kind of, like, a rarity.
That's true, yeah.
And everybody at East Asia Soft put in a lot of work to do the manuals, like for Rainbow Moon, and like the one in Soldner is amazing too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing they can do. And we try to like do as much as we can. We like to also ask if like they have a soundtrack they like to sell. So like a lot of our releases had soundtrack releases side by side.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically anything the developer wants to do, we kind of leave everything open. Like, if they somehow want to do something crazy one day, like maybe like do posters or like figures or plushies, you know, that option's always open. We have a lot of contacts now.
Mm-hmm.
We could probably figure something out. So we're always open to doing new things.
This is cool. So was it difficult to build all this infrastructure for publishing those retail copies? When I talk to indie developers, like you said, it's very difficult for them to get the license for all the piece for retail copies, to get the printing done, to get the covers right and so on, and to get the verification from Sony. Was it difficult to build up this infrastructure so that you can do this more quickly?
It definitely was. When we first started, Josh spent about, I think, like almost 8 months learning Sony's system. So there was a lot of work that he did. So that was probably the hardest part, is just learning all of the different Sony systems and like figuring out the approval process. That's another reason why we started offering this to other developers, so they didn't have to spend as much time doing this. Because it's a lot of things can come up out of nowhere. So it was definitely a process, and even now, like, stuff still comes up out of nowhere that we're like, what? Why is this happening? But
yeah,
for the most part, we have all the contacts we need, and everybody at Sony has been really awesome, and we can usually get everything going. They're really responsive. We're really happy to be working with Sony, and the fact that they're allowing us to do this is just amazing. So I really enjoy the fact that they're still pushing for physical.
Yeah, this is really cool. You see also other indie games here released in Europe, indie games in fact that are only available digital in the States and in Japan. So I think there is still a high demand for retail games, especially in Germany. Beforehand, we talked a bit about about the copies that are sold into the world. So you said Germany is on somewhere among the top five.
Sorry about that. I was drinking some soda. Yes, yeah. Germany is on the top five. They're definitely one of our biggest like customers bases. So it's like our top five is like the UK, Canada, Germany, and France. And then after that, I think it's like Spain and Portugal and et cetera. So Germany is definitely our top five, which is...
It's a lot of Europe.
We offer... What was that?
It's a lot in Europe, isn't it?
Yeah, Europe is a huge... you guys are really big on physical, it feels like. And in some cases, you actually get physical games that I don't even get. Like Fatal Frame is one on Wii U that still drives me crazy that you got and I didn't get.
Yeah, I know. This was, but this is very interesting because when you look up for collectors online, for example, Jesus Rocks, he got an awesome channel and he's talking about all the collector stuff, and I think he mentions you quite often because
we're fans of him.
Yeah, a big shout out to him. I watch his channel also every time. I like him a lot. He also got a guest, I think it's Reggie, and he talks about a lot of these European imports, which is funny because we get this stuff here, but it's also the other way around. There are also games that are only released in the US or in the States, and I think collectors all around the world, I think they got all regions in their cupboard.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that you guys got back in the day that kind of drove me crazy was you got Shenmue 2 physical on Dreamcast.
So, I'm really sorry.
That's okay. Get the ability to import your old data, and like that was the only way we could do it, is to import your game.
Yeah. But well, that's a cool thing. So the limited run games are of course region free and so on. So everyone who is interested can basically import your game and play it on every system in the world. I think Vita is also region free, if I recall it right. What do you think about games on Xbox and other systems like Nintendo systems? Will this be a possibility for you in the future?
Yeah, we're looking into it. Microsoft's been one we've been trying to tackle for a while. If we did Microsoft, our games would still be region free because that is allowed with Xbox One and like 360. But Nintendo, on the other hand, is very big on region locks. So that's the only downside. But again, if we were going to publish Nintendo games, it would probably be things that Mighty Rabbids developed, or it'd be games that places like Europe already got. Like if we somehow were able to do Fatal Frame. Mm-hmm. You know, it wouldn't be a big deal to Europe because you guys had it. So it would be more for people in North America. Yeah. But we would definitely like to expand. We're hoping, you know, when the NX stuff gets announced, maybe we can jump on that bandwagon early and start putting games out for that. So we're keeping our ears open and just talking to everybody we can, making new contacts at every convention we go to. And a lot of people, like you said, like you met or you talked to SideQuest Studios and found out about us. Like, we meet a lot of devs that spread the word about us, and it kind of just like a lot of our games actually come from people saying good things about us.
Yeah.
So it's kind of pretty awesome to see that. So I'm hoping one day the right person talks to somebody at Nintendo for us, and then they contact us.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah, I'm really glad that there will be a possible option in the future that our game Rainbow Skies will be released as a retail copy, because it feels like an achievement to have something in your hand instead of a digital game. So I'm really glad that you made the deal with Rainbow Moon, basically. So
that was our whole mentality with our games. We wanted something to exist that showed like had our development company gone out of business, we didn't have anything to show for it. So
yeah,
that was another reason why Lemon Run started. We wanted to be like, hey, look, this is the game I made.
Yeah,
and like, right, show it to people and have it on your shelf.
It's very important, really important for creative people to have something in your hand at the end, like a product that's it feels like something accomplished. So it's difficult to explain, but I think I'm really glad about this. So one question about the digital age and so on. What do you think where will this go? Do you think this will be more, that we will see more of this, more of the stuff like streaming and so on? I think Netflix, everyone watches Netflix and so stuff, and streaming, gaming and streaming is also some kind of, I think Gakkai, Sony did something with Gakkai and so on. Do you think that retail copies will vanish sometime in the future?
There's a fear that like the PlayStation 5 and whatever the new Xbox is one day will be focused on digital. I feel like, I don't know, like I'm kind of mixed on the feeling. Personally, I feel like physical is coming back, and I feel like a lot of people are realizing how profitable physical can be.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they might actually keep physical going for a little while, like maybe one more system after this, and then it'll probably go all digital. Because in America, our internet's not, there's a lot of areas where the internet's just not that great. Like we don't have Google Fiber everywhere yet. It's, our internet speeds in rural areas is really bad. And a lot of rural areas are more into buying consoles than they are PC stuff, because internet connections might be bad. Like I know a lot of people that have PS4s and they keep them offline, and that's just crazy to me. Like, because a lot of games come out now and they're not even like patched properly.
Yeah, right.
And they're playing these really broken games because that's what they're used to. They're used to playing like Super Nintendo and like not having to need the internet. So I feel like the consoles may hold on to the idea of physical, like at least one more generation, but I can definitely see the industry going more digital, which is sad. Cause like, I don't know, I tried Sony's a streaming service with their games, and like, it just, there was like a whole second lag between it. Playing games like Sonic Generations impossible. But like, and I have really good internet in my house, so I was kind of shocked to see. It's just, I don't feel like we're there yet in America, but I know in other places internet's better. And I feel like Europe's pretty crazy in terms of like how your cities are. There's a lot of rural areas out there too. So
yeah, right. It's basically because of the landlines, because a lot of these what is this called, the cables, the wires are not really, really old, and it would be very expensive to renew them, to build a new structure of cables. And the other option would be something over satellites and so on. But this is not advanced yet. So
satellite internet's not that great.
Yeah, right. And so we got the same problem here in Germany and Europe too, like you in the US. There, of course, are spots where internet is very fast for every big city and so on and all around it. But once you get more, I think the vast majority of internet connections are quite slow. I think even that Germany is below the top 20 of fastest internet connection in the world. It's somewhere behind or before Thailand. And that's really slow.
Wow.
Yeah. So we, I think most people here don't. I think Netflix is working quite good. I don't know why, but for most people, it works for the most part. And I think regarding to games, games are really big, and I think a lot of people are very, very annoyed that they have to download huge games. For example, I think the next Call of Duty game will be about 100 gigabytes when you want to install and download it, and you have to wait 100 gigabytes. It's about 2 days of download. For some people, and that's crazy. You buy a game, you can play it for two games. This is like, what's going on? So, and then there's of course the problem with the licenses and so, yeah.
And a lot of places I know too, especially like the more like places out in the country, they have like tiered internet. Like basically, they have like a data cap, so like they're only allowed to use so much internet per month, and that's another problem. Like. The digital age will bring like, oh, I can only download two games this month, and after that, I can't even use the internet. So, I don't.
It's also then you mentioned it in the beginning of the interview. It's also this part of preserving video game history, and when games are only available digital, they will vanish sometime. The one way or another, and something that you got as a repro copy, it's like a vinyl or like a CD album you got, which is physical, because you can find it in stores, and some people collect these things and hold on to it for like several years, and you can say that for digital downloads. I think some downloads are available for maybe 4 years or so on, and then they are just gone, and nobody can recall it. I think PT will be, for example, we had this as an example before, this will be a game, this will be sometime in the future, this will be some kind of urban legend, where people talk about this cursed game that was that's just not available anymore, and I think this will happen to a lot of download games.
Yeah, it's definitely not a future I'm looking forward to, so
yeah.
I'm hoping that we can help combat that, and like maybe other people will rise up and, you know, kind of let the industry know that physical is still here to stay. Because again, like I feel like the collecting scene has just exploded, especially in America. Like we have people send us pictures of their collections all the time, and I'm just amazed at like how much these people have. Like I still hold on to all my games, but yeah. There's some people that are like extremely dedicated. Like Josh, for example, has a lot of games, like a lot of games. Like he went way out of his way to like start building up collections, and he could have even more if he wanted, but like there's just a point where, you know, he started running out of space. A lot of these people have like giant game rooms, like dedicated, like it almost looks like their whole house is dedicated.
Yeah.
I think that's what I like to see.
It's also something beautiful to have this kind of collection. Of course, there has to be a limit. You have to know when to stop, of course. But there's nothing wrong to have a collection.
I'm all for it. I love collecting. It's this company is definitely catered to us. So
yeah. So let's talk about the value of your games when we are at collecting right now. When some person for any reason decides to sell his copy on or her copy on eBay, the prices are galactic, exploding, I think. What's your opinion about it? What do you think about when people put this on eBay and demand $200 for it?
My opinion, so one of the things we set out to do with developers, and like one of the reasons we like to do things our way, like selling exclusively through our website versus like a retail store, is the developers' games are worth more money. Like the value of their game stays if they sell it through us. Whereas if you sell like, let's say you sell an indie game and you put it on retail in like a GameStop here, it's going to end up in a clearance bin, and your game is always going to be looked at as like, oh, that game is not really worth my money or my time. And a lot of people like, we'll kind of just pass over it, and they'll think it's just like a cheap game. Like with us, your game will have like this legacy behind it, and people are going to be like, why is it so expensive? And they're going to realize it's the only way to get it, and it's just going to keep the value going. So I'm all for it. I'm not like a huge fan of like the fact that a good portion of our buyers do buy our games just to sell them, but that's the way the collecting market works. And it's kind of it's a very delicate ecosystem. So like, I understand I need it. It's, you know,
yeah,
and we have rules in place to keep people from abusing it. So as long as they're staying within our rule set, I don't really care.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting, because what you mentioned about the price of a game, when the price drops, this is also a problem of digital games, I think, because there are a lot of digital sales, like the Steam sales and so on and so on. The prices drop so hard, and they are so low that people don't value games that much anymore, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely true. Like, there's a lot of like with me with digital games, there's a lot of great games out there, but if they're priced too high, I'm just not going to touch them. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to wait until they go on sale. And then if I see a game go on sale too often, it kind of like, I don't know, it sends the wrong message to me. It kind of says like, oh, this game's struggling, that's why it keeps going on sale. Even though, like, as a developer, we know it's because, like, maybe sales stalled and they're just trying to make some extra money. But
yeah,
it sends a bad image. And like with our games, the fact that they stay so like high in price, it I don't know, to me, it's like a better image in terms of like lasting appeal.
Yeah, I have to agree. Yeah, it's like you work for about 3 or 4 years on a game. For example, Rainbow Skies is a game where SideQuest worked a lot of put a lot of time in it, a lot of effort, and it would be a shame when the game will be released later on and will be just in sales. And it's in German we say unter Wert verkaufen, when you sell something that's way more value for a really, really low price. And and you're right, this sends the wrong message, because people think, okay, games are cheap, I don't have to put a lot of money into games, and this has two effects. At first they don't buy the game right on release. Most of the time they wait for about 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the price drops about nearly 40%, if not even 50%, half the price. And this sends the message, this is something that has no value, basically.
Yeah, it's it's definitely like, for example, there's a lot of like collector's editions of games that I like or really want, but I know that a lot of these are going to be overprinted, so I don't like stress myself out about getting them. Then there's cases where, like, because I've not been like, the need for it is not there, I just kind of forget about it for a while. And obviously, like, the perception's already there for that game, like, for a lot of people. If they were like, oh, like, that, that's why our games are limited. It kind of creates that need to get it now. Like, if we don't and we say, like, oh, this game's open edition, get it whenever you want, it'll be okay. Like, sales are just going to sit there because people are going to be like, oh, I can get this whenever I want, it's not really a big deal.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What's the how many do you produce? That's about 2,000, I think.
How many do we allow?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'd like to allow 2 copies per person. Mm-hmm. Depending on the size of the run, though, it can drop down to 1 per person, like we did that with Dragon Fantasy. But we're trying to increase the sizes of our runs now to allow 2 per person, because a lot of people like to keep one sealed and keep one open.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And how many prints do you make?
How many prints?
Yeah.
I mean, our comfort zone's around like 3,000 to 5,000.
3 to 5. That's very low. Yeah, that's very limited.
It still depends on the game. A lot of games, if they're like, it's a bigger title, like with the Shantae, it's 6,000 for each game. Mm-hmm. And it's a big, and that's PS4 only, so that's still a lot of units. But we're doing that because it's a bigger name, bigger brand, it has a big following. So we basically adjust the size of the run for the game. So like Dragon Fantasy was one also we had signed earlier, and we didn't really know like what the demand was for it, and then it turned out like that was a little bit under, like we kind of under gauged it, and it sold out really fast. Soldner, I think, was the craziest, because even East Asia's office telling us like it didn't sell like super well digitally, and like they didn't expect it to sell out that fast, and we thought 3,200 was good because it was a Vita only game and it was a shmup. And next thing we knew, it was gone. And that was probably the craziest, like, whoa, this our Vita fans are like extremely passionate.
That's a strange thing about Vita, isn't it? Sony says Vita is dead. Depressed says Vita is dead, but the Vita is still very alive.
Yeah, I feel like if Sony did more physical stuff for Vita, it would sell like more units, because like the people that have Vita are hungry. Like they want more games, and they keep getting promised things, and people keep going back on their word, and that's driving them crazy. So anytime there's a physical release, like they go after it, because digital on a Vita is terrible. Like your memory card is just like, there's not enough space on them. And if you delete your game and don't back it up and don't have cloud saving, it deletes your save too. So that's another bad thing.
It's also the download server for Vita is very slow, at least here in Germany. When you have to download a game and it's, for example, something like Uncharted or so with 4 gigabytes, you wait forever. It's horrible.
Yeah, and then you don't want, like, if when you're done playing that game, you need more space.
Yeah.
You're kind of sitting there on the fence, like, if I delete this and want to play it again, I'm going to have to wait, like, a day to play it. And then you're not going to want to play it again because you're like, oh, I have to wait too long to download it. And then there, it's just gone at that point. You're like, whatever.
Yeah, right. And but the Vita is still very alive. I think there are a lot of also Japanese games that are still released retail on Vita because people still play it. So I don't understand Sony why they don't support the handheld anymore.
Yeah, the Vita is going strong in Japan. I went to Japan in March this year, and I remember going to a game store, and like an entire wall was dedicated to Vita.
Yeah.
And then I come back to America, and we have like maybe a whole 1 foot section of Vita games, and that's it.
Yeah. They vanished completely here in Germany. You can only order them online, and when you go to a local store, they're basically gone. There are no Vita games anymore.
Yeah, most of our stores here, unless it's GameStop, like Vita games are like in the clearance section, or they're in the like the non-secured section. Like you could just walk up and like take it because like they just don't care.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a sad story about the Vita. But there will be still a few games in the future. And what will be your next games? Let's talk about it at the end. So what's up next for Limited Run?
On October 28th, we're going to release Shantae and Risky's Revenge and Shantae and the Pirate's Curse for PS4.
Oh, both games. Both games. Is it a package? Both. It's a bundle or two separate?
It's two separate games, and they're going to have reversible covers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then there'll be three soundtracks available too. They're all different.
Ah, okay, interesting.
And then I think maybe the first week of November or so, we haven't officially decided yet, but then we're going to have Volume for PlayStation Vita.
Ah, Volume, that's the stealth game from the guy who also did Thomas Was Alone, isn't it?
Correct, yeah, it's Mike Bithell.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ah, very cool. Looking, my co-host Manuel is a huge fan of Shantae. Me too. We are really looking forward to it.
I've been playing those games on our stream lately, and I'd already played them before, but I really like them, and I just love the art, and like the gameplay itself is really smooth, and like the soundtrack's nice. It's a great package, and it's great to have it like physical. That's a game.
Yeah.
When it came out, a lot of people were like, "This should have a retail release," and now we're able to do it.
Yeah, right. It's a very joyful game. I think it's one of the few games that are, you said it, the art style, the music and so on, that is very, very fun to play. And it's not a depressing game. It's not a dark game. It's a very fun and lighthearted and colorful game. And you don't see that often these days.
Yeah, everything's dark and gritty now.
Yeah, that's right. Everything's sinister, evil.
And they're even trying to do that with Power Rangers now.
Yeah. Oh, no. Really? Power Rangers.
Yeah, there's a new Power Rangers trailer. You should watch it when you get a chance. It's pretty bad.
It's like the Michael Bay treatment of Turtles and Transformers or what?
Yeah, that's probably the best way to describe it.
Okay. Okay, I have to look it up after this interview. Oh man, I'm not a Power Rangers fan, but I can't imagine a darker version of it. This was always so...
it's kind of weird. I don't know what they're going for.
Yeah. Okay. So, Douglas, thank you very much for this interview. Where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me on Twitter. It's at Limited Run Doug. They need to follow our main account too, which is Limited Run Games.
Mm-hmm.
They can follow Josh as well at Limited Run Josh. They can go to our website, limitedrungames.com, sign up for our mailing list. That way they can stay up to date. We have a Facebook, Instagram, and we have our own forum. So we're basically everywhere. Like, that's one thing we love to do at Limited Run is stay connected with our fans. And
yeah,
I'd say for how small of a company we are and how much we do, I think we're doing a really good job on that.
Yeah, that's cool. So thank you very much again for this interview. We're really looking forward to Shantae. And so I wish you and the listeners a good day.
Well, bye. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, bye.